Hello, and thank you for listening to the new series, Series 2 of the Nurse Researcher Podcast. This series aims to chat to clinical academics and to really identify what their role entails, how their jobs are split, what they do in their daily life, and really what are the tips and what advice can they give to people aspiring to be a clinical academic. So give us a listen, share the podcast with others, press follow wherever you listen to or get your podcasts, and we hope you enjoy the episodes. Hello and welcome to this latest episode of the Nurse Researcher Podcast. I'm delighted to have Ada Hoy with us today, who is the UK Professional Lead for Research at the Royal College of Nursing. Ada, delighted to have you with us.
Thank you so much for inviting me along.
It's wonderful to see you, and I can tell the listener we've been trying to get this together for a while, haven't we? And we've just not been able to find a date, and I've always wanted to talk to you a little bit more about you and your career and your role in the RCN. So it's great we've got this bonus episode because we're on the clinical academic series, but I think where we are with the RCN at the minute with a research strategy that's supporting people to be clinical academics and guiding people to how to bring research in their role. So we'll ask you a little bit more about that, but I have to stick to the routine, Ada, and I have to say, tell us what your role is now first, and then tell us how you became a nurse and why that happened.
Okay, so my current role is I'm the UK Professional Lead for Research at the Royal College of Nursing. So I joined fairly recently, and the role is very much around embedding research as an integral part of nursing. So thinking about the attitudes towards research, thinking about the current cultures around research, and thinking about how we really embed that across nursing, right from the very beginning of nursing careers, all the way through till leadership within research and all the different roles in between. So I think it's a really exciting time, both of research and nursing, and this role in particular as well, in terms of how that might shape the future.
So take us back to the start of nursing for you. Why did you become a nurse?
Okay, so the reasons why I became a nurse, I've always been fascinated by people. And always been interested in working with people. So my career journey started as a mental health nurse. And I think it was through that I became really fascinated in thinking about, well, what do nurses do? What are the possibilities in different nursing careers? I was really lucky to be really inspired by some amazing lecturers, tutors at the time, who were very much, gave a real social perspective on nursing and what nurses do, particularly within the mental health space. And I became really interested in the ideas of looking at health and social inequalities and how we might challenge that, as nurses within the workplace, and thinking about the different populations that we work with. I think particularly working with vulnerable people. So as a mental health nurse, I worked with people with long-term mental health problems. Working in the community, working in rehabilitation services, and really saw firsthand what it was like for some people working, living in communities and trying to be integrated into those spaces whilst there's still so much stigma and vulnerability attached to that. And so for me, a big part of my role has always been about wanting to create change, wanting to make, the nursing space, making to make, society, the world a better place, essentially, for people who are vulnerable and marginalised, underrepresented and served in different and multiple ways.
Yeah. And did that come to you early? So was that something you felt clinically, or was that your route into academia? Was that something, so you felt like you wanted to do that clinically, but what gave you that open door to academia? I suspect you did a degree in nursing.
I did, yeah. So I did a Masters of Nursing Science degree. So at the time, it was one of the only masters that was, in the country for nursing. So very, very new. And actually very challenging, both academically, intellectually, as well as doing a 4-year degree programme straight from school. Yeah. It was all of those things kind of culminated in, thinking about, well, what is it like for students who might not necessarily think about going to university as a starting point? I think that was, a culture shock in itself, if you will, at the age of 18, going to a university, living in halls with 6 other people that you haven't ever met before. All of that becomes a real challenge for, I think, students. And I think that was part of my reason for wanting to go into academia. to become an educator was thinking about the challenges that students have into education. And like I say, just being very inspired by people, who before me who've done, these who've created career pathways that might be quite unconventional career pathways as well, not necessarily having a linear pathway, but doing things that people are really passionate about, really enjoy. And certainly my career hasn't been linear by any stretch of the imagination. I don't think it's been a conventional career pathway at all, but similarly incredibly enjoyable. Have learnt a lot throughout each of those experiences, and still have so very much to learn.
Of course. And did the PhD follow the master's, or was there a gap?
There was a gap. So after the masters, I spent some years working in practice, and was very lucky to have been offered, well, to have applied for and been offered a position as a practitioner health lecturer, which I suppose was a bit like a modern day clinical academic in the sense of spending 2 days a week in practice, 2 days a week doing research, and 1 day a week teaching. And that for me really gave me a real insight and real starting point of thinking about, well, what is it that I want to do with my career? Ideally, it perhaps would have been a combination of, sticking with all three of those different areas. But then that essentially became one of the challenges, which I recognise is still perhaps one of the current challenges that we're working on in terms of shaping how we formulate career pathways that can sit across those three different fields. And it was from spending time in that role that I started having conversations, or people started being, I suppose offering mentorship, essentially offering that guidance to say, have you thought about this as part of your career? Have you thought about a PhD? And at that point, I genuinely hadn't. It was one of those things that seemed, so far reaching, so far way beyond what I, beyond my expectations or what I thought I was able to achieve. And so it was through those conversations that really, really led on to me doing my PhD, which was ESRC funded. And it was a PhD in sociology and social policy, looking specifically at restrictive practices within high secure hospitals, looking at the emotional work and the emotional labour as part of that. I suppose the care and containment kind of type dilemmas, but thinking about how people have the capacity to care and hold on to that compassion whilst working within challenging spaces.
That's fascinating. My mind's racing because I currently have a PhD student that's in a similar area. So we're currently live recording here, and I'm already thinking about speaking to you about something different. But to take you back, what do you think people recognized in you between that master's and that PhD? Because they don't say to everybody, have you thought about a PhD? So what had triggered that in somebody to guide you towards that? You can't be modest now.
Well, to be honest, I'm not entirely sure. I kind of think if I can do a PhD, then anybody else can as well. But I think it is probably about asking questions. I think I've always been someone who is very curious in terms of asking questions, just fascinated by the world, what it has to offer. Thinking about, well, yeah, what does I suppose research starts at the point of asking those questions, and so perhaps just my personality of asking all those questions, and having that curious mind perhaps in itself lends itself to research, maybe.
But I mean, there will have been something in you. There will have been something in you that they spotted, because I sense already that you were cherry picked to do that. We've got somebody there that we think we can work with, and it'll do well, and you have done well. So it's justified, isn't it, when people make those observations about people. With regard to the PhD, if we've got, because this is the clinical academic series, and we are thinking about those roles, did you feel like it was a steep learning curve? I mean, I think we all go into it with intrepidation, don't we? We all think, am I capable of this? Very few people go, well, there's a PhD around the corner and I'll nail it. There's a sense of, there's a PhD, I hope I can achieve it. I hope I'm good enough. But did you feel it was a steep learning curve, or did you feel like that step from master's to PhD, did the master's equip you for the PhD?
I think for me certainly was a steep learning curve. I think having spent a few years out in practice and away from academia to stepping back into being a student, that certainly was, a big challenge. It was a challenge in terms of identity as well. I think going from, being a nurse, being a professional essentially, to being, being a student again. And I suppose there's always, like you say, that self-doubt that creeps in of, am I capable of doing a PhD? I think for myself, I'd set myself additional challenges of working outside of my nursing profession. So doing a PhD in sociology and social policy has essentially quite different expectations in terms of writing style, even of, of, I suppose, of learning more about social theories and social concepts that I might not necessarily have learned if I'd have stayed within nursing. And I'm also particularly grateful that I was supervised by two, well, I was essentially supervised by two consultant psychiatrists. So again, there was that real, that real multidisciplinary feel to my PhD. And I suppose on top of that, the context of my PhD, doing some really challenging work in challenging spaces. So one of the sessions that I used to run when I was an academic was around doing research in around sensitive topics specifically. And that in itself, I think, has a whole layer of added emotion for a researcher, particularly a researcher with a professional background where you're managing dual identities or multiple identities. And also thinking about, well, how do you manage those? How do you navigate those spaces of that professional responsibility and professional duty with also the research ethics of conducting research within different areas as well? So it certainly was a steep learning curve, but certainly so very much to learn and so exciting to have conducted a PhD within a high secure space.
So were you a salaried PhD and fully out with the with your funder? So you were fully out of nursing to do the PhD.
So it was a full-time PhD, and I was incredibly lucky to be to be funded by the ESRC with a stipend for that.
And then where was the opening to get back into sort of a nursing role, a clinical academic nursing role? What created that opening?
So I didn't have a clinical academic career after my PhD, interestingly enough. That was the pathway that I was interested in following prior to the PhD. And when I was looking for opportunities after the PhD, it was actually a post that came up as a teaching associate. So full-time teaching and research at a university. And I suppose that was challenging in itself. I applied not thinking I'd get the job. I applied actually 3 months, somewhere between 3 and 6 months prior to finishing my PhD, I started that role. So that in itself, again, was another layer of complexity and challenge. It was, finishing the PhD. I ended up actually moving house, starting a new job, moving house, and completing my PhD within the space of 3 months. So that in itself was an enormous challenge. But also, it's one of those things that you look back on and think, I don't quite know how I did it, but I'm glad that I did because it just offered so many opportunities and so much experience. And I suppose at that point, I'd had a lot more experience doing research than I had teaching. So for me, it was the, well, how do I embed, how do I build my experience in teaching to match the experience that I have in research and practice?
And I think you've named three of the most stressful things you can do in life, where you did all three in the space of a few months there. So all credit to you. So I suppose my question in relation to that is, you've diverted away from your nursing role a little bit to do a postdoctoral teaching role. Was that because there was no real roots in to develop you then? Because this is the difficulty I think we've got with people who want to be clinical academics. There's a sense that, and this is not all areas, but there'll be a lot of areas within the NHS where if somebody goes off to do a PhD as a nurse, nobody would quite know how to bring them back. If they went off like you did and like I did to do a PhD full time, what do you go back to? Because you surely don't just go back to your old role 3 years later with just this new title and all of this research experience. Was it because nobody was quite ready to take you on from a clinical perspective? Nobody would have known what to do with you, or was it purely a choice to leave nursing essentially to do the teaching role?
Yeah, I think there's always a choice to be made. I think for me, having done the PhD full time, I think I had questions around, I suppose, my own development as well as in, would I have wanted to go, would I have had the confidence after 4 years out of practice to go back into practice? It also seemed like, in a sense, I suppose, too good of opportunity not to have taken up that role, having been offered that job as well. And I was never particularly clear. I suppose I've always been open-minded in terms of career pathways, so I've never had that real fixed, I definitely absolutely want to do this. I think I've always been a bit more guided by, I suppose, my gut instinct about, what
Yeah.
opportunities come about. And yeah, I suppose being, I think some people might describe it as being having a bit more of a jigsaw career pathway,
Yeah.
where it's doing lots of little bits that kind of fit in at the time and that I'm, passionate about and excited by, and doing things that get me out of bed in the morning, as opposed to being, really fixed and rigid in terms of this is exactly what I want to do. And I suppose that, it works for different people in different ways.
Yeah. And it's a new skill set that you can align back to nursing or back to a clinical career or an academic career. Academic career. I've seen you public speak. You're very confident. You public speak very well, and I suspect some of the teaching role has allowed you to do that more so than the nursing role, hasn't it? So these are almost dual skills, aren't they? Things that you can bring back to any sort of career pathway you then take on.
They absolutely are, and I don't think I've ever, completely left nursing in terms of when I was teaching, when I was doing research, in academia. It was always connected to nursing, so it's very much teaching nursing students, teaching research to postgraduate nursing students, and wider healthcare professionals. And yeah, and similarly thinking about, well, how do we learn from other professions
Yeah.
in,
Yeah. Yeah. And other disciplines, all across. Yeah. When you're doing that. So I suppose for me then, I could say to you was the next step the RCN, but with you it may not have been. What happened next?
Yeah, so I worked in academia for, gosh, a good number of years, and this role came up at the RCN. So I'd worked in various roles across academia, from, like I say, starting off as being a teaching associate, to being an assistant professor, to associate professor, and also being the deputy director of postgraduate research. And that was a role I stepped into, just a week or so prior to the very first lockdown during the pandemic. And so that was, a huge role to step into, looking after over 150 students doing international research, PhD students, and leading various programs while still teaching undergraduate and master's programs as well. So I think for me, as the term in that role came to an end, I was thinking, well, what would I like to do next? What is my real passion here? How can I develop, and how can I develop others, into these research careers? So when this role at the RCN came up, I absolutely jumped at the chance of applying and was incredibly lucky, to have been offered the post.
Lucky or talented enough?
Hopefully
I
a bit of both.
that because that's all that we've had. There's a history of that now in the first series of this podcast of people talking about being in the right place at the right time, being lucky, serendipity. You have to be the right person to be in the right place at the right time, don't you? That's how I view it. And you certainly have come across as being the right person for this role. So tell us a little about the role and how it was sold to you and what the expectations are for the RCN now and nursing research.
Yep, so the UK Professional League for Research role is a national role, so working with all four nations to really think about how we do research currently and how we do research better. So thinking about, what practices are currently in place and how can we support, research careers, like you say, whether it's clinical academics, whether it's pure academics, researchers, clinical research nurses. And thinking about the different fields and contexts that we work in as well, whether it's primary care, whether it's tertiary care, whether it's independent health and social care as well. And thinking about the different fields within nursing, whether it's adult, child, mental health, learning disabilities, all of those different things come into play in terms of the questions that we ask. Thinking about the different areas of expertise, thinking about who we involve in research as well. So I mentioned that my area of research is very much around working with marginalised communities, working with people who are underrepresented within research, and recognising that nursing as a profession has historically been, and perhaps still is, underrepresented within within healthcare, of research. But also thinking about how do we involve and inspire students to be involved in research, and how do we think about members of the public being involved in research, especially when there might be challenges, whether it's around protected characteristics or other vulnerabilities, such as, experiencing mental health, for example.
And what have you found to be the real challenges for you in this job? Has it been trying to, has it been getting to the workforce? Has it been trying to develop a culture where, you almost have to sort of knock down all the barriers first? Has there been any main challenges or anything that stands out for you? Because I think, I do a lot of teaching, and there's still a lot of nurses that go, "Oh, research is my kryptonite. Oh, I hate research," and I don't. And I think you don't know what it is that you're saying you hate, actually. It's the fear of what it might be that you don't like, rather than what I think it is. So, do you find nursing challenging to get into with research? Is that culture difficult to start to build?
So I think one of the things that I've experienced is certainly research can be a bit like Marmite when you talk when you talk about research to different people. And certainly there is that culture of, I suppose that intimidation around research, which I think, is certainly something that I want to challenge and I'm hoping to change. I think for me, research has always been such an exciting space. And that's not to say that it doesn't come with challenges. When talking through my career, it sounds like it's been a really linear, a really, I've had, been lucky with my opportunities, but similarly, there's been a lot of hard work that's been put into that as well, not only in terms of learning, but carving out career spaces. And I think for me, research would be around, challenging the culture, challenging the attitudes around research, making it fun, making it exciting. I think some of the, when people talk about research being so very challenging, or the word elitist I've heard being used quite a lot, is saying to people, well, actually, have you ever asked a question? And I'm sure the answer is always yes. And it's like, well, what do you do about it when you've got that question? And I think for me, that is a very starting point of research, is asking that question and doing something about it to have that knowledge and develop that knowledge.
Yeah, it is. And I think people like the RCN through the conferences, which I always think are wonderful, and through the publications, I think can help to demystify some of these myths. And that's what we've been trying to do in the podcast. I think our first series that focused on the professor role, I think it was important for people to hear that professors started just like you and I. We all had the first job, we all had the band five or whatever it would, the D grade as it was. I'm old enough now to remember being a D grade, but we all had those early jobs. We all built our way up and grasped for opportunities. We sometimes felt like we dropped in the right place at the right time, but you work towards these careers gradually, and everybody does it at a slightly different pace, and everybody takes a slightly different route. It's very much a game of snakes and ladders, isn't it, to establish the career you want to establish. Sometimes you have to drop down before you can get back where you need to be, and that's the nature of it. But I want to get the message out there that nursing research is for all. It's for all researchers, for all nurses, and that's whether you want to be a consumer of it, somebody that interprets it and reads it, or truly engaged, or leading it, really. There are roles and means for everybody. And I often say here at Keele University, where I work, that people can bring their own speciality to the table and support a research team. Because the research team might have all the methodological understanding, but actually they don't quite understand, the actual frontline work that's involved in cardiology or musculoskeletal health care or diabetes care. So there's a role for everybody, but it's how we break down those barriers and those fears that people have got that you've just spoke about, isn't it? It's making it feel like it's achievable for people.
Yeah, but I think some of those barriers are actual barriers, whether they're systemic, structural barriers, lack of knowledge, lack of awareness, lack of support and mentorship. I think that's a huge area. And I think some of it might be perceived barriers as well, as in lack of confidence, for example. And I think those are all the areas that we have, they're all areas to work on.
And I think it is, isn't it? It's about listening to the voices of people that don't feel they've got the opportunity with research. I think it's finding out, because it's wrong for you to try to identify barriers for people, isn't it? You have to listen to them to see what the barriers are, and it is often opportunity with people, and how to forge it and how to push on. And I think that's probably an under-researched area, isn't it? There's a number of people doing that here in the UK and around the four devolved nations, but essentially we've got to reach out to make sure that there's an equality and equity around opportunity, haven't we, for research?
Yeah, but I think that's one of the joys of working with the RCN, work with our members to really engage our members and say, well, what are the challenges? What are the different challenges that people experience and what can we do to support and help around that?
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes the RCN and working for the RCN so very unique, is that membership space.
Yeah, and I think it's seeing the RCN for what it is, isn't it? There's a hell of a lot of opportunity for nurses to align with the RCN, and and to provide support and to provide guidance through the RCN, rather than seeing it really as the people that are on strike for nursing, and that it's all that element. There's many functions and facets, isn't there, to the RCN, which perhaps people haven't discovered. And if they go into the web pages, it's quite easy, isn't it, to tick a box to make sure that you're in the right areas that you want to be.
Yes, absolutely. I think I've been a member of the RCN since I was a student, and I kind of think, gosh, it wasn't until I joined the RCN as an employee that I realized just how much, access to resources, access to people, networks, all of those things, that I don't think I necessarily recognize quite as much as I do now. And I realize that I'm still learning that there's so many more things that I'm still not yet aware of. And even things like the RCN forums, signing up to being part of a forum. Where you're surrounded by people with similar areas of interest, similar areas of expertise, and really creating those networks and those spaces to think about how how people might be involved or might be involved more in those spaces. Like you say, there's so many different RCN conferences, whether it's the research conference, the educational conference, so many events constantly happening.
And such opportunity
And
for people at Congress as well.
Yes, absolutely. So all of those different spaces, and we do try, the RCN tries really hard to have those different events in different places each year to try and make it more accessible and to people across the countries as well.
So I'm the first to say that I always attend the research conference, and I found it the best conference I've ever been to for networking and finding people that you can link in with who are similar minded in similar positions and all different stages of the research, of a research career. You can find people are very, very much at the start who are just trying to pick up new things. You'll listen to PhD students, you listen to postdocs. I find it a real good opportunity to learn from one another. And I very often come away with surnames and try and find their papers and have a read, because I've been really, really, sucked into what they do through attending a conference, because it's big enough without being too big. And it allows people to really chat and get together, and it's really collegiate, isn't it, as a conference for research.
It really is. Yeah. So one of the things that we've tried really hard to work on is to make it, a safe and enjoyable space for everybody, like you say, no matter what stage of careers. So we specifically build in early career researcher networking events. We realise that actually, for somebody who might be at the early stages of their career, going to a conference for the very first time can be quite an intimidating space, not only to learn what a conference is about, the layout, being in a new space, being there only for a few days, not knowing anybody when you go by yourself, all of those things. I kind of think, whatever we can do to really support people, engage with research, to engage with conferences, to build those support networks, is absolutely crucial to developing those successful research careers.
Yeah, it does feel that way. So what's next for you? What's next for your career in the RCN, perhaps? What's your driver at the minute? What's your aim?
Well, I've been at the RCN for less than a year at the moment, so
Is that all it is? If it would sound terrible if I say it feels longer. And I mean it in a positive way.
So at the moment, I'm still very much, developing my role, developing, the research within the RCN as well as beyond the RCN, really building those connections and building our partnerships and collaborations as well. I've mentioned that the RCN has, such a huge membership. We've got over 500,000 members, which is enormous and great. But similarly, it's thinking about, well, actually, we work closely with our members, and it's impossible for us to work alone in a silo within that space. So thinking about, well, how do we really connect with other people? And how do we really create research where it does become, research for everybody and becomes, integral and central, and that is the norm rather than the exception.
And is there still opportunity for you to do research, or are you more focused on the sort of the building of research for the RCN now and developing their strategy, or are you able to do any research yourself at the moment?
I'm certainly really passionate about continuing to do my own research, and with that, hopefully building opportunities to support people along the way as well. I think one of the joys of being a researcher, is working in creative spaces with other people, to really have those conversations and build research ideas, and supporting people at the earlier stage of their careers as well, and thinking about how we mentor, how we offer coaching, how we support and really develop those research skills across the board.
And looking back on your career, I mean, you say it's linear. It sounds linear, but they never are they? Your career, you always sort of venture here, there, and everywhere to get to where you eventually want to be. Would you, if you look back, would you do anything differently?
I don't think I would. Is the honest answer. I think I've learned so very much in all of my different roles, and I suppose potentially the one thing I might change is potentially having the confidence to go for opportunities at different times. And I think that's something that I always it's easier to see that in other people, as we perhaps alluded to earlier on. I think I see that in so many of my former as well as current students, colleagues, peers, and I think we're very good at encouraging each other, but I suppose looking inwards as well, as in, are we doing the things that we're encouraging other people to do as well?
And it's difficult to grow confidence in people, isn't it? It often comes with experience, and you always think to yourself, if I could go back then knowing what I know now, that wouldn't have been possible, would it? So that's the difficulty of it. But I think if you say you wouldn't change anything, and you're in this research role now that you're really enjoying, then as things go at the moment, you've pretty much nailed it. It's a role that you're doing well, that you're getting recognised. The RCN's really thriving, I think, as a union and as a professional body supporting people. So it sounds to me very much like you where you need to be and where you want to be.
Absolutely.
Perfect. So I'll probably look forward to seeing you at this year's conference, I would have thought.
Yes, that'd be
I
great. I'll
probably look
certainly be
forward to seeing
there.
the conference. And it's been really, really nice to talk to you today. It's been long overdue, but lovely to hear a little bit more about the RCN and about what you've been doing. And great to have a mental health nurse as well as on our bonus episode. So you may regret the notes I've made, because they're probably people that I want to talk to you about and making research links already. But that's what we do as researchers, isn't it? You hear somebody that's done something slightly similar to somebody else, or somebody that you might want to introduce them to. And I've done that today, so I've learned more about you today than I know, and we've spoken face to face a few times. So lovely to hear your story, and nice to speak to somebody as well with so much of the career ahead, because we often talk to professors who suggest that this is the pinnacle of their role, and this is what they're doing at that time. But I think it's nice now in this series to speak to people who have got the careers ahead and are mapping out careers. And with the clinical academic role, I think that's what we've got to find out from people. How have they done it? How have they mapped it out? How do their contracts work? How has it been a success? Is it a success? What are the barriers? Those are the things we need to know, because there's so many people trying to forge clinical academic careers in different ways at the moment.
Yes, I think it's certainly an exciting space. So yeah, always happy to build those connections, and to for people to be in contact as well. If there's any ever anything I can support with, more than happy to have those conversations and to create new networks and links for others as well.
Perfect. Ada, thank you for your time.
Thanks so much, Andrew.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Hello and welcome back to the Nurse Researcher Podcast. I'm joined again by the lovely Eleanor Hovard, and we are here today to talk about the Ada Hoy episode, where very unique episode, very different career pathway, trajectory, and a role as the UK professional lead for research with the RCN. So what did you think of Ada?
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. I loved this episode. I mean, I thought some of the things that Ada said really resonated with me, but I loved that she offered a really different pathway, I think. I mean, I know they're all quite bespoke, aren't they? Once you've done your PhD, but actually hers was even perhaps more different than some of the other interviewees for people to hear about. And one of the things I think that did, there's a few things that resonated with me. One of those was when she said about the identity challenge from having a gap in studying and also going from being a nurse to doing a PhD to being a student. And I do remember that quite clearly when I started my master's and I was in a session in a module with people that were about 20 years younger than me, I think. And I remember sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, you know, felt so sort of out of it. But it didn't take long. I have to say, it didn't take long, you know, before I got back into the swing of, you know, writing essays and things. So I thought that was really interesting that she mentioned that, because I don't think that's come up before, has it, about that, you know, that identity that you do have maybe as a nurse and then going into doing some studying as well. And I really enjoyed listening to what she spoke about working in challenging spaces as well as a researcher. That resonated because she's worked with individuals from underserved communities like I have as well. And also she mentioned about the added emotion of being a researcher. So I suppose there's more sort of things related to her research. But again, it was about that identity. How do you manage that professional sort of duty that you have, but also the ethical role that you have as a researcher? So that was really interesting to hear her speak about that. And also, you know, the fact that she took what she described as a jigsaw pathway, not a linear approach. And she's very open-minded about career opportunities. I think that was something I took from this interview. I thought, yeah, it's really reassuring that she said that, I think, because whilst, you know, these career pathways can be quite bespoke, and you have to try to project what your future might look like, in actual fact, sometimes other opportunities come up, don't they? And it is having that open mind going, actually, I hadn't thought about doing this. And maybe I enjoy this aspect more than other aspects. So in some ways, it's good to have somebody that's done that and hasn't necessarily gone down the traditional clinical academic sort of career pathway, so to speak. So there's loads, I thought, loads of things that were really interesting that she did speak about that really resonated for me in particular.
Yeah, and it's not a known route, is it, that she took, really. I mean, even the accelerated master's program that she started with for nursing is still quite novel. Not everybody does that. And it's short, and sometimes it limits you. Some people might feel like it limits you clinically, but it does project you somewhat from a research perspective. So that seemed like a good platform for her. And to do that and then get the practitioner health lecturer role was, when she was at that level as well, was quite unique, wasn't it, that she'd become more of an educator than a clinician initially.
Yeah, that's right. She said she went into full-time teaching, didn't she?
Yeah.
And did some research as well and spoke about how, you know, she wanted to develop that experience of teaching because she'd focused so much on the research. So that made sense as well, and interesting, you know, because that is an option for individuals to take, isn't it, to go just purely into teaching and research. So it was really good to hear, you know, how she's progressed and developed, and look at her now. You know, she's the UK professional lead for the RCN as well. So she's had an incredible career so far, and really inspiring. And I thought it was important as well that she did mention, she mentioned about research, didn't she, about being Marmite for some, but really how she's working on that research culture and challenging it. And she spoke about it, you know, we've heard this before, I think, about research often comes across as being a bit elitist. You know, science can be a bit exclusive, can't it? And, you know, highlighting that people can be a consumer of research and a happy one as well. You don't necessarily have to be a researcher per se, but applying it to your role is vital, isn't it? So it was good to hear, you know, some of the things that she was thinking about in her role now, and how she hopes to mold that culture that exists at the minute.
Yeah, and it really endorsed what we've been trying to do, because as she was saying that about that sort of elitist view of that it's only certain people in healthcare or in nursing in this instance that would do research, that professor series of ours in series one was about was trying to demonstrate that actually, all professors aren't elitist people, you know, and very few of them are, in fact, particularly in our field or discipline. There's a sense that they all started where you were, and this is the pathway they've taken. And all of their pathways in series one were like jigsaws, weren't they?
Yeah, very true.
The linear pathway isn't really there. And I think sometimes you can get caught up. Understandably, institutions like the NIHR will show pre-doc, doctoral, post-doc, senior lecturer, senior researcher, and whatever it would be. But not very few people can follow that pathway in a linear process because there are knocks, hurdles, barriers along the way, aren't they? And your research can take you elsewhere. There are equally other funders, but it shows you lots of linear processes for research that realistically you can't match.
No, it's interesting you said that, because when she was talking about those pathways, it's exactly what I was thinking about, was that NIHR image that we see, you know, the different stages that you go along to develop your clinical academic career. And I understand, you know, we do need that framework. But at the same time, it just, you know, things don't always work out so neatly, do they? But of course, you do need some sort of foundation to work with. But yeah, really, really good. And I also thought, she mentioned right at the very end, actually, about having the confidence to go for opportunities at different times as well. And I think sometimes, again, that can be quite difficult, can't it? Especially if it's something a bit different, that you might not have had in mind, that maybe isn't so traditional. And she did say, you know, that's easier to see in other people. But I think that was a really important point, because, you know, I've felt that myself at times. You think, you know, actually, this sounds quite scary to go for this, but once you do go for it, it opens up a whole other world sometimes, doesn't it? So it is having that confidence, but maybe having a mentor or somebody that's been there, or somebody like Ada to, you know, to hear her story and how she, you know, she has gone for it. So yeah.
And I would assume, I didn't ask her this, but I would assume that the educational role she's had previously has equipped her for the RCN role as much as her PhD has, because she's got to present, she's got to speak in front of, in front of large groups of people, be quite strategic. I should imagine that the educational role has prepared her for that as much as the research role.
Yeah, that's right. And I suppose it's almost like checking in with yourself every now and again, isn't it? And thinking about, what am I really good at and what am I really passionate about? And when you do have to make those career decisions, you know, thinking about those things to help guide you. That's what I've started to do, certainly, as I'm approaching sort of the end of my PhD. What are those aspects that I've really enjoyed, and what are those aspects that are probably better at maybe than others? But then also there's the argument, well, maybe those areas that you're not so strong in, maybe you should develop those areas more.
But
But
she
yeah.
showed as well that, she's not, she talked about being inspired by people, and I think she talked about curiosity as well, and she's been not just curious around the research query or inquiry, but curious around new roles and different things to do with her own skill set. So quite brave, and I say that about a lot of the people that tell us their story, because it feels that way to me. But she's got so much to offer, I think, for the RCN, and they've got their, they've got their research strategy now, and she's there to sort of to deliver that. And that's a big task, isn't it? That's something that
Huge.
you need people on board with, and she'll need people, she'll need regional people to be able to do this, and across the devolved nations, it will be important that we try and get this message across. So Ada will be at the RCN Research International Conference later this year in September. Is it 10th to 12th, I think, of September? And we can now announce that so will you and I, and the RCN have agreed to let us do a live podcast. So the Nurse Researcher podcast will be coming to you live from the RCN conference. I say live, we'll record it live, but we'll edit it and then we'll issue it as we, but it'll be recorded live in front of an audience for the first time, and almost feel like a drum roll. But our guest, our interviewee, the person that will be the center of that first live recorded episode, will be Joanne Cooper, Professor Dr. Joanne Cooper from NHS England. And Jo has kindly agreed to be our guest at the time, and I think she's just the right kind of guest that we want on that. She's known, she's known for her support and her role and research at NHSE, and I think that will be of great value to us to have her there to talk about the vision for research,
Absolutely.
and probably tips, and I'm sure the audience will love to hear her research journey, and how she's got to where she is, and what's happened, what's happened along her career, And equally perhaps what she's still looking to do and looking to achieve in the roles that she's got. So yeah, we have Dr. Joanne Cooper with us. We'll be doing an early morning fringe session, and we'd love to record it in front of an audience. So if you are going to the conference, do come and join in. And if the opportunity arises, we may be able to take one or two questions from the audience, I think, on that day.
Yeah,
And have another take on it. So yeah, I think what's great is we'd got a new route from Ada. We'd got a very unique interview there of somebody that's done something a little bit different, and we'd got that sense of letting people know that the RCN isn't just there to sort of protect your rights and as a sort of governing body and those sorts of things, and it's actually there for education and research as well. And there are two arms of it. And, the research steering groups and forums are the things that people should take note of and join and become part of.
Yeah, and it just goes to show how much they value research, having somebody in that role as a professional lead who is
Yeah.
a nurse researcher as well, which is
Yeah.
really great, isn't
Yeah,
it?
it is. And mental health nurse. We should
Yes,
point that out, shouldn't we, for its uniqueness, the mental health nurse as well, which is really good. And really good to
absolutely.
sort of to raise the profile of mental health nursing, I think.
Yeah,
So
absolutely.
yeah, so perfect link there from Ada and the RCN to us and the RCN. So we'll look forward to seeing people at the conference, and we'll mention that on future episodes if people want to come along. I will say, do share this podcast with your friends or colleagues where you think it might be useful. Do leave a comment wherever you view your podcast. Do give us a rating. All of these things matter, apparently. Eleanor and I aren't professional podcasters, so we're learning as we go. But these things are really useful when you want to share your podcast with people. So give us a listen, give us a share. And until the next time, I'll just say thank you, Eleanor.
Thank you. Thanks, Andrew.
No worries.
Take care.
Thank you again.